Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Sorry for the delay. We had a few minutes getting things organized here, but that's normal for me. Welcome to the show today, and I am broadcasting live through People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on ShakeAndWakeRadio.com. We are a viewer-supported station, folks, so if you like what's going on here, please throw a few dollars in the kitty. I know the people running the stations would really appreciate that. I am joined by Dave Delisle, and I believe Mike Trehearn is in the room now. We're just going to have an open conversation about stuff going on in our country and stuff going on around the world, and possibly even discuss a few geological events that I wanted to discuss today. But welcome to the show, Dave, and I don't know if Mike is in here or not. I know he's ready for the call, Steve, if you want to pull him in.
He's already in the call. All he has to do is join us. I'll tell him.
Okay. Well, just tell him to join the call. How you doing, Dave? And congratulations on your attempt. Congratulations on your run. And I know the election is a very, very hot topic in Canada right now. I know that the information I've been getting lately about election meddling and some of the things that are going on behind the scenes is very disturbing. But in the same mouthful, it's what I expect from this government.
I expected it too, believe it or not. And realistically, I mean, it seems like the whole country wants to lean more towards the left than they want to come back to a normal country for some reason. They don't understand the freedoms they're losing.
I think there's a lot of people still on the right, but our voice is being silenced so badly right now that none of this information really got out about what the PPC stood for. I honestly believe that Canadians were really, really kept in the dark unless they went and did their own research and started going online. Mainstream media had no coverage of what Maxine was doing in his campaign. Every other candidate, Elizabeth May, got coverage on CBC. Jagmeet Singh, of course, Scheer and Trudeau got massive coverage on CBC, but not a murmur about what Maxine and the rallies that he was having, the people he was drawing, and what he was saying. None of that was exposed on mainstream. So we had a monumental task in front of ourselves, and I think we put our foot in the door, though. I really do. I'm looking at the separation movement right now in Canada. I want to get your thoughts on that right now, Dave, and what you see happening there.
Well, believe it or not, part of Quebec, from what I understand, the information I've been getting, they support the West on that. However, part of Quebec wants what they want only, and they don't care about the West. And I really have issues with this stuff. The reality is that what we need to be doing is getting together and unifying and putting a stop to the crap that's coming out of Ottawa.
Absolutely. You know what? I've sat and thought about this and thought about this and thought about it, Dave, for weeks now, seeing this whole movement started. And really, I mean, I can really understand where Albertans are coming from. I mean, Alberta is decimated right now. But
oh, absolutely.
What is doing this to Alberta? What is the driving factor for this cause of rise and separation? And if you were writing a page out of the United Nations playbook to become sovereign, take away country's sovereignty, and to take a country over, you'd want to divide that country. And really, to me, we're a nation. We're not just Quebec, Ontario, but the divisions that have been driven into this country by the governments are just unbelievable. We're fighting amongst ourselves when we should be fighting the government.
Well, absolutely. And what's worse is, for me, where I'm at in the north here, there's the invasion is slowly coming here. And more people I'm hearing are bitching about it, that, you know, everything offends the invaders, and we have to change. And there's been arrests of people walking dogs in their areas because dogs offend them. There's more and more bitching about Christmas. Well, you know what? Get over
it. No swearing. We don't swear on the program either, Dave, okay?
Well, sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Okay.
We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, if you're moving to a country, you're supposed to assimilate to the culture of that country. You're not supposed to bring your culture into my country and demand I condone your culture and put mine aside. And that's what we see happening in Canada right now. It's just unbelievable how far it's going. How you doing, Mike? Look, welcome to the
it's
show.
It's only fair. It's only fair. It really is. Because you can't go to Saudi Arabia or India or any other country in the world without assimilating to their laws and their ways.
What would happen if I went to Saudi Arabia with my wife right now? She went down to the beach and put on a bikini and said, "You guys have got to start wearing bikinis because it's my culture." What would happen to her? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Not just her, but you.
You. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing good, Barry. Hi, Dave. How you doing, buddy? I just kind of popped in. Sorry, I was a bit late. Hi, Dave. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. Sorry I was a bit late there. I was kind of tapping into your conversation, but you know, I'll filter in when you want to ask me a question. I a few things were just answered there, but I have a few different things to say about it, but probably in line with Dave as well.
Yeah, I'd like to hear him myself.
Yeah, we're here to share different opinions about it, but I think we all agree at what we see going on. I mean, what are your thoughts on Wexit, Mike? And this whole separation movement. And you must have heard what I said about it, what I think.
Well, you know what? I knew what you thought anyway. On the separation situation, I think it's risky business on people dwelling into it. I don't think they realize what it takes to become a country, first off. Second off, it's not even attainable. We need to search out a different way. I think Jason Kenney's come up here in the recent weeks of supporting Alberta on its independence. I think that, you know, those messages need to be changed. I think electoral programs have to change based on, you know, not so much as populace, because, you know, we see that in Ontario, the 416-905 area decides what Ontario is doing. And like Dave's saying, anywhere north of that 705, the balance of Ontario doesn't agree. So, you know, our system is broken because it's so many years since it was made. I think the electoral system goes way back to being made to before we were even provinces. So as we were growing, obviously we didn't have many seats because we didn't have any people here yet. Right. So, you know, those things fall into play too. I think though on our energy sector, Alberta supports, I believe it's like $42 billion a year that we share with Canada, which, you know, I guess is attainable to a point where, you know, we all chip in together on how the country works when certain provinces are having trouble. We all chip in, but, I think that it should have a stronger say in our electoral program. I believe that it is. As far as separation, that's a big endeavor. That's probably a 20,000-page document concerned about currencies, where we have trade, who gives us credit because our currencies hold no value. There's lots of things that fall into play. So I don't think really it's a valid statement. I think people are angry, which they should be angry. But I don't think that separation is the answer. It wasn't a short, you know, maybe 3 months ago that, you know, people on social medias were saying that, you know, we hate the separatists from Quebec. And then 2 months later, we're separatists ourselves. So, again, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction. I understand why people are upset. There's a way that we can get that done. Some people disagree with that. Independence and separation are not the same plan. Brad Wall the other day took on our execution and the same thing that, you know, it's okay for us all to pay equalization, Saskatchewan as well. But we want a rebate from the other provinces in other sectors, exactly. Which would maybe be electricity or whatever it may be, data, telephones, whatever it might be, because we support it so handsomely. So I think that's probably the conversation where we should be going. We hear these people on, Barry, we talked about it, the de jure government and separating every province into their own countries. I mean, you know, this stuff is just way far-fetched. It does not hold any value. It's going to go nowhere. The province, especially in Alberta, I mean, we have two key provinces in Edmonton and Calgary that hold over half the populace of the country. Those people are never going to vote in favor of that. That's not going to happen. So I think that's just a bad thing that's happening in the middle of all this controversy of everyone already being upset. It's just too much to handle. When we can just settle down and let's look at this appropriately and let's take a stab at what we can do with Ottawa to give the voice of the West a little more of a say. Let's say in BC, we know Vancouver is very liberal. North of Kamloops, you never find a liberal. So the rest of the province doesn't agree. So in your area, Barry, I understand they've gone NDP. But again, a small sector of group of people. But that doesn't mean that the whole North should get a say in that.
Exactly. I can't understand why people up here went NDP, but well, that baffles me. It really does. I actually, the new electee here, is like our new MP, I challenged him to a debate on climate. So I'm waiting to hear back from him.
See, if the people would look at the leaderships, look at the leaderships. I mean, Jagmeet Singh doesn't care about Canada. He wants to form it into what he wants. He doesn't care about the rest of Canada. He calls everybody in Canada that are Canadians racists. I mean, what does that tell you about this guy?
Yeah.
Where's his motivation? Now, we've got the situation where this whole country is looking at other options other than being one country. We're all looking for different options now because of what Ottawa has done and Trudeau has done. We've got so many people out of work, yet they want to bring more people in to fill jobs. Well, here's a thought. Use the jobs that are available for the people that need jobs, that are here. Take care of our people first. You can't fix a problem by bringing in more people.
Well, the LNG project.
It's not going to happen.
Get a load of this, Dave. There's 4,000 foreign workers coming in to work on the LNG project up here in Kitimat. Well, I'm going, what the hell is this all about? But you know what? These companies get subsidized for bringing these workers in, and there's people in Alberta out of work, and there's people on the East Coast that are starving to death. Those are the people that should be getting these jobs, not people coming under foreign worker programs. We really got to talk about that, man, because what a scam this is.
Yeah, Alberta's decimated, but the whole country is falling apart. Corporations are bailing out of Canada because of the stupidity, we'll say, that the government is pulling. And it's all over. They're just saying, that's it, we've had enough. They can go to Mexico, they can go to the States.
Trudeau is absolutely decimating our economy right now, decimating our economy. And pretty soon we're all going to feel it big time. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, 100%. You know, I don't think this is all an easy solution at all. I think that, you know, in big parts of our country, people are very discouraged. There's no jobs. People are very limited to that. I mean, in our energy sector here in Alberta, how they're talking about shutting down, you know, our tar sands, you know, how they're shutting down our energy sector of oil altogether. When British Columbia says it's okay to send the gas by pipeline, which we already have, and then says that we can't move our pipeline across to get to Tidewater. Now, you know, that's the reasons that they brought, say, Jason Kenney from the federal government doing immigration, which everyone knows how I feel about Jason Kenney, but let's just see if he proves me different. He hasn't so far since 2007, so I'm doubtful. He spoke about holding back equalization payments. He's talked about bringing 40,000 Somalians over the next 4 years to rural Alberta. Yeah. We saw what happened in the video in the hospitals from a person of let's just say, newer immigration, if we want to stand politically correct and not get ourselves in trouble. But, you know, he assaults a child. The security guy just stands there, does nothing. Nobody runs to this girl's aid who's videoing this demonstration of, I'll call my UN representatives. I believe it was probably a hospital, and he wanted to be seen right away. He did not want to wait and sit down, and so he attacks a child, a baby.
Yeah, that was appalling, man. Appalling.
Well, this is what we're bringing, and we wonder why we have no defense. We're not allowed to say anything, let alone do anything. Had anybody touched this person, they would probably ended up going to jail, even though there was a video stating what he was doing, and then assaults a baby, well, Barry.
Mike, if you're bringing people in from an area of the world where life and death mean nothing, that their culture is completely different than ours, that they don't think like us, they don't want to be like us, they want to continue the lifestyle that they came from in our country. What are you doing? I mean, I got to call a spade a spade. I'm not a racist person in any shape or form, but it seems to me, according to reports that I read and multiple reports that I read about people coming from certain areas of the world, when those people enter a society, hell follows. It happens over and over and over again. And I am not a racist person. I love everybody. I want everybody to have a good life. But if you're coming to my country, buddy, you better be ready to assimilate to our culture. And if you're going to harm my family, then there's going to be problems. And that's what we see happening right now, buddy. It's unbelievable what's going on. The culture destruction of Canada is ramping up.
We have a society.
I basically said that on the campaign trail. You know, these people are coming here. They have no respect for us. To me, the country is basically my physical home. If you're going to come into my home and start dictating to me or start trying or coming in to harm us, yeah, I have an issue with you. You know, I'll base things on the strength of your character. But if you're going to be – your character is an evil character, guess what, buddy? You and I have a problem, and I don't care what color, what race, anything you are. It's irrelevant to the fact that you're an asshole. A moron.
I understand your
frustration, Dave. Like, you know, look, our cultures are being pushed back as Europe is pushing back against the agenda, seeing that the results they've had in this mass immigration. Ronnie Cameron mentioned on one of his shows the other night that here's our culture that has been taught for the last 40, 50 years to not be racist, to be good people. So we are, this is what we are. You know, we've never shunned anybody that's in the country. You know, we all get along. And then all of a sudden we step up to the plate because someone is being racist and we're saying, don't be racist. And we get targeted as the racists. So,
exactly. You know, but it's not even just us. It's the immigrants that have come in legally and that have come here to assimilate to the culture, to be positive influences in the country. And they're complaining. They're complaining as well.
And who are afraid of these cultures coming in already because they've been fighting this mandate in their country for over 700 years.
Yeah, they got away from it, and now it's following them, man.
Yeah, they came here to escape it.
And they're the ones that are ridiculed, saying that they've forgotten their culture. Well, no, they haven't forgotten their culture. We're actually quite proud in Canada that don't want the culture status to go away because we're probably the number one country in the world that made that happen correctly.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hurt each other. We don't condemn each other in any way. Actually, quite frankly, in the transportation business, I deal with very many other communities. Never a problem. There's never that discussion or a feeling that this person doesn't like me or I don't like them. That never even comes up. We laugh. We joke. We tell jokes on the phone, man. It's like, you know, it's funny. Like, we have a good time. So that is not present here. And the general public are saying, what the heck is anybody talking about? So, yeah. You know, when we have a country like that, and then people come over, say they were from an area of whatever, and they came over here from India, and they showed up, and they were causing problems over there, that's really a problem for the people that are already here. So it's not just an attack on white people or Canada. I wish everyone would get away from it. We have cultures that stand together, united in this country as Canadians. And the generations of Canadian kids that have been here, say, fourth generation, say, I'm just going to pick one, I don't know, Sikh or Hindu, I'll mix it up, or Chinese, whatever. They don't care what's happening in India or China. They're little Canadian kids that they don't even understand what they're even talking about. They've probably never even been there.
Well, if you're talking about – I didn't at any time insinuate our culture was based on white. There's been people coming to this country for the last 80 years through legal immigration in the 30s and 40s that assimilated to our culture, love this country, and have no qualms in standing up against it, period. So it's not a white issue. It's a culture issue. And the culture of Canada is something that we're fighting for. And that culture is shared among many, many people that have come here, seen what this country has to offer, and are willing to stand up for it.
You know, I brought up this case the other day, you know, on another show. And I said, look, we have an opportunity in Canada to have connection base around the world based on the size of our cultures. So with India, Burma, China, whatever. I mean, we can go on and on and on. We have an opportunity to probably have the highest rate of trade in the world. And we can actually sell trade, literally sell trade, because we get a better deal because we can work better with all the cultures around the country. All these other countries will work with us because we're solidified. And we could sell trade and probably make more money and income than any business promotes to this country, just in that alone. So, you know, when we talk about these types of things of what we have available to us, and then this separation charged by the government. So I'm going to lay this one on Singh about the racism. It's the government, Trudeau. It's the government promoting racism, not the people. The people are saying, what the hell is he talking about?
But the Islamists as well that are involved with the government that are sneaking these little things into these 500-page deals.
Yes.
Slowly but surely.
Who's going to sit and read all that? Now, I shared a thing before Facebook stopped me from being allowed to share about what Trudeau's considering doing now for seniors. He wants to put an age limit on voters for seniors.
Yes. 85 years and older, you're not going to be allowed to vote anymore because we really don't have a say in the future of the country, even though we've been here all our lives. Yeah. Another great idea.
Well, what is that doing?
264,000 votes of dead people that voted.
Well, I don't know if this is the main thing that's picked your guys' butt this week, but this multicolored poppy that they came up with.
There's another one. It's just ridiculous.
Infuriated me. They have stepped over the line, and it's just another example of what Trudeau is doing to this country.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Well, I had an uncle that was killed in DF, and I have an issue with that.
I have an issue with that, having any kind of representation with the people that died for the freedoms that we're giving away right now and not standing up to fight for. They're rolling in their graves right now. They're disgusted with what they see going on in this country. Where are the Canadians with testicles?
It's our time to step up, regardless of what happens.
Well, if we don't, Mike, you know, and I know how far it's gone. We all get it.
Yeah. In the north here where I'm at, the majority of the people are old school, and they're not liking what's coming. But the reality is, what are they going to do about it? Are they going to stand up with the Patriots and say that's enough, or are they just going to let things go? And it comes down to that.
You know, when I talk to... You know, people of, let's say, this myth and du jour and all of these things, you know, 1901, 1931. I mean, years ago, we spoke about the British North American Act. When Tim and I were going live all the time, we spoke about that a long time ago. Here we are, you know, trying to separate our country into 11 different countries, and we can't even get 20 people to step up to a rally. Speak our words. So you think there's going to be grip? To me, it just adds more confusion to the table. Leave it alone. Great information. And when you talk to Doug, you know, who actually wrote the paper on the myth and has put together this CD collection, okay, that's fine. But at the end of the day, no matter what, even to force a referendum, you can have all 4.3 million people or whatever you are in Alberta vote on a referendum, but unless an MP takes it on, it's for nothing. We cannot force a referendum on any government. We cannot do that. So
what's happening in France. Look at the rallies and the protests in France and in Germany and in the UK. There's thousands and thousands of people out, not just a few.
In the streets. Yeah, literally.
How long is it going to take for Canadians to get to that point?
I think when we see the imbalance, because the general populace does not see it. It's not in our face like that. Like, we don't have a group of people marching down the street of Toronto a million strong and people are saying, what's this demonstration about? So the awareness has been held off so that we don't have this awareness. So they're quietly doing it. They've learned from being over in Europe from those governments to keep this very quiet. And Trudeau's calling the Conservatives fear mongers. Mm-hmm. You know, putting fear into the people of Canada. It's pretty clouded, man. It's pretty scary stuff.
There's a major media quash on stuff that's going on in Europe. But if you really look at what's going on over there, take a look what Austria is doing, look what Poland's doing, look what all these countries are doing right now. They're really starting to take a stand against this invasion that's happened to their country. Austria is a prime example where they're deporting thousands and thousands of illegals right now out of that country. And they've shut down, I forget how many mosques, and they've deported over 100 imams have been sent out of the country. Right. They've taken major steps against it, and we're seeing the rest of Europe look at Austria and go, wait, we need to regain our sovereignty. I don't know if France or England and Germany are too far gone now. You look at the populations and how many Muslims and are living in those countries right now, and how they set up areas of no-go zones, and really what kind of toys do they have put away, and when the word jihad is given, what's going to happen? You know, are we going to see slaughtering in the streets? Are we going to see civil wars? That's a very, very real possibility, because if you understand their doctrine and what their plan is, at one point they are going to turn big time on anybody that doesn't believe or follow their religion, and that's their doctrine. They're sitting back waiting. And then you factor into that thought, if you have a government that behind the scenes is actually supporting this and wants this to happen in the future, would be hard to get in some pretty cool toys, would it?
Yeah.
Normal person has no defense. I mean, that sounds a little far-fetched, you know, maybe, but it's not.
It's not far-fetched. It's happening.
I'm just saying that people that listen to this, and they go, wow, you're telling us that the government would allow these groups to bring in weapons to be used against their citizens at a given time when the word is go and everything breaks down. And you think that could really happen? Yeah, it could happen. And it is happening.
We have UN troops in Canada right now.
I know that. Okay. Try and get the general public to realize what's going on. Go ahead.
If I could just pop in for 1 second.
No, go ahead, Mike.
We spoke about immigration, and for many years we've been talking about immigration. We talked about many things within our government prior to this immigration stab. Once we got onto the immigration, they threw the tree huggers at us, and we went through that for a little minute, and then we got back to mass migration. Now, how did they turn the clock on social media as far as Canada goes? Simple thing and simple procedure of Greta showing up and throwing climate change in our face. But here's the mask of it all. Today, last night, I got an email that came across, and I checked on Facebook, and I passed it on here to Facebook today. We had the video that came out of the collapse of the American dollar. Trump had spoken about this in his deliberation of running for president. I mentioned it many times live, and people said, I never heard him say it. Well, you know what? If you read between the lines of what the guy was saying, yes, the collapse of the American dollar on its way. So we get this video, stock exchange mandated the way it was. It wasn't truly correct. We're very close on the times of making this happen. But then comes up across my email that the Deutsche Bank collapse begins. And this is federal people speaking on this video of actually the government. That there's collapse. So all of this is clouded for currency collapse. And China, Russia, we all know everyone's overextended. And so now all of a sudden someone comes up to me today and says, yeah, but they've just put gold up to hold the currency. Gold has always been the one that solidifies the currency. That is nothing new. It's overextended 280% around the world. Now that's trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And the banks are now starting to suffer. So in the mortgage business here in Canada, the CIBC doesn't even trust, let's say, the RBC for their money because their money's not secure. The collapse is on its way. Happening very rapidly. And I think that's a mask for all of it, that if the currencies go down like happened in Greece just, a year and a half ago or something when they had their problem, they They then didn't want to take the migration in, and the EU held them at bay because they were bankrupt. They had no money. So they had to say they were going to bring in this migration then to get the money from the EU so they could survive, because people were going to their banks. And I think they could only get at the time, if I remember correctly, like $60 out of their bank account. They couldn't even get $100 because the bank didn't have the money to give them back their own money.
Yeah, there's bank runs going on all over the world right now, Mike. The public's not aware of it. Gerald Celente just did a video, and you guys should listen to what he had to say, because he's reiterating exactly what you just said, that we're very, very close to a total collapse of the dollar.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is happening. I mean, you know, I talked about currency collapse years ago. People thought I was crazy. That would never happen. I mean, people on Facebook were saying, what the hell are you talking about, man? Well, what I'm talking about is what's happening right now. So I believe that all this masking that's going on, no matter what it is, it's to protect the vision of us just imagining that we're collapsed on our dollar. Just think about what we do as Canada or America. If we woke up in the morning and the stock market's plummeted, which is pretty standard when we have, anyone looks back, whenever we have big balloons in stock markets like this, we're having a problem very shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of keeping the middle class out of money. That's what it is. Yes, it's going to happen. And it's happened before. My sister, who was a vice president of foreign exchange for Scotia McLeod years ago, told me in 1980 that in 2020 we'd have no currency. It didn't mean anything to me at the time. I was 20. I thought, yeah, 2020 is a long time away, man. But she even stated that the markets would collapse over that amount of time, that if they kept going the same way, that would happen. So that's what's happening. Almost to the day that she said to me in 1980 that that would happen. So,
well, cash is society. It's just around the corner, bud.
Correct. So what
they're not talking about it because they're not talking about that now because they don't want to cause a panic. They'll cause runs on the bank if they start mentioning it.
They'll mention it when they want the panic to start. Believe me, because it'll be the mechanism to bring control into society. Well, you think about the implications of the American dollar collapsing. It's just it's mind-boggling, and what kind of state of chaos that would put society into in a matter of 24 to 48 hours. And society would
be screaming.
Well, the whole world. But I'm talking society. The whole world could be in a state of chaos. And, of course, the powers to be are going to come along like the knights on white shining horses, and they're going to have the solution to the problem. It's okay, guys. Everything's under control. We're going to bring in a new currency, and everybody will operate under the same currency. You know what? Society wouldn't have an option but to conform when you think about it.
Right.
If people are in a state of chaos, they can't get money, their kids are hungry, they can't use a bank card, everything's changed, and you come up with a new solution, you got to follow it or else you're not going to be able to do any commerce in this world, period. Boy, I'll tell you, it's I can see that scenario unfolding myself, and it all plays into the end game of a one world government.
And it is coming.
Well, and that's coming. And you know, we know that that's going to happen, and that's the way it's going to happen. They're going to flip the currency. And that's my biggest fear.
Well, they have chips.
And of course, then we've been masked on arguing about all these points that keep being put up against us and in front of us. And you know, when in all along, it was about a currency collapse, and the world banks are prepared for this. They already are very triggered and already on this. They're just waiting for everyone to have that collapse and then go to a one world banking. Galati sued the federal government, Harper's federal government, about keeping the Canadian banks. This goes back to Harper. This isn't even Trudeau. How much in his economy that Stephen Harper was in charge of for his amount of years, how he sold the country out to Saudi Arabia. We don't own anything.
Yep.
So, you know, my message was then let's trade with Russia. And why do we trade with Russia? Because it would give, first off, Russia is not a communist country for those who still think it is. It is not. Do we all have different issues in the world? Sure, we do. He's connected to the Middle East. His land is connected to it. but he's always considered himself the West and has a very strong relationship with Canada. As I mentioned in sports, as everyone's been on hockey lately. So when our hockey teams go to Russia and they win a medal, who shows up to present the medal? The president of the country. What other president shows up at a games of any sort in the world? Nobody. And he always congratulates the founders of hockey, Canada.
Yeah, so, Trudeau would show up to a surfing medal ceremony, I would think.
He's going to be surfing at Topino when the Cascadia goes.
That could be true, Barry. But, you know, to have this rainbow stuff of a small collection of people that we have freedom of expression already. Gays are allowed to be married in our country. The LGBTQ are no different, whether they're gender fluid or however they want to call it. I'm not even sure, so I'm not criticizing because I don't know the rules because it seems like they don't even know the rules. So it's kind of hard for us to address anybody when we don't know the rules.
Hmm. Why have the rules been changed so much that we don't know what we're doing anymore, who to talk to and what we're talking to? Where did that come along? Where did that come into our society? And why was that brought in?
I haven't seen anyone explain it.
Yeah, yeah, well, you explain that one to me, and then I'll try and answer your question. But it all comes back to divide and conquer. It all comes down to one thing, guys, divide and conquer. And it doesn't matter what you look at, everything in our society seems to divide us. I mean, we talk about professional sports. I mean, I haven't watched a sports game now on TV for years, man, because all it to me is a way to keep society divided. You got guys coming into the coffee shop in the morning, and the most important thing in their life is who won the game last night, who got the points, who's leading the scoring, blah, blah, blah. And I look at these people and I go, wait a second, hold on. Your country's being destroyed right now in front of your faces. Are you aware of this? It's pathetic. But to me, it's just another way to divide society. Hockey used to be a game we played when we grew up, Mike. We loved it. We played it because we loved it. I grew up playing hockey because I loved the game. And,
me too.
You know, when I was at the age where I could have possibly gone professional and I had that opportunity, believe it or not. But anyways, all being said, there wasn't the $1 million price tag sitting in front of my face. Back then, if you went to the professional level when I was 18 or 19 years old, you'd be making equivalent to an upper level executive maybe in a company. You know, there wasn't, you'd be in the $60,000, maybe $50,000 range a year. And now you have signing up contract, your bonus to sign for a professional contract is $2 million just to sign. I mean, it's what it's done to society. You've got kids now, their whole focus of their life is growing up is I've got to make the NHL. I've got to train. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. The fact is that 1 in 10,000 kids actually make it. So you got 9,999 kids that are in states of depression for the rest of their life because they didn't fulfill their dream.
Because they just weren't good enough.
They just weren't good enough.
The second metal pin doesn't work for me. That's, you know, these days when the kids go to school and they play a sport, everybody gets a ribbon.
Participation ribbon. Yep.
Participation ribbon. Nobody's left behind. No one is left behind.
So there's no incentive to win because you're still going to get a ribbon to bring home to mom. Or dad.
Exactly. Exactly.
You got to chuckle.
It's a situation that's gotten far out of control in every sense of the word. And that's why I've been moving on this agenda recently. I've talked to a lot of teachers, and I said we can supply a ballot. Nobody knows who voted in favor or not. But most teachers and principals that I have spoken to would fully 100% agree in here in Alberta anyway. That we should be taking the education system out of the government's hands. Because if they don't push this global agenda, they lose their job. They have no choice. They're forced to teach in the mannerism that the government tells them to change. And if they don't, they get fired. They can't afford to lose their job.
Yeah.
And slowly over time, more and more people are taking their kids out of school and homeschooling them.
Yeah, so you see the rise in homeschool across the country, man. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Parents are getting together and forming groups now.
I threatened that when they wanted to bring Arabic writings into Alberta in Alberta and single-handedly went to one of the heads, well, the head of the education system, who was a principal to my kids. And I said, hey, man, I will go with petition and take everybody out of that school. You'll lose your funding. We will not hire a union teacher. We'll go against the whole regime, and we'll do it in the bottoms of the churches and other neighborhoods supported by the businesses. Now, that's exactly what Jason Kenney's trying to put in place right now in Alberta, that he wants the education system to go back privatized as far as funding, and the government not responsible but still running a government mandate. But you can't do that. Either you do it all the way, or you can't do it halfway. That doesn't work. And the kids don't. Our parents don't want our kids taught in the schools, in this manner. That there's been a big publication about that. So single-handedly, I went up and I didn't say much about it. They stopped it. Rachel Notley wanted it put in. The schools advised against it. That we already, after school and universities, we already have every language that you can learn in college or Cégep in Quebec or university or whatever the case might be. That's all available. Why do we impress on just one language? Again, the NDP's move.
You can give the government something that's running perfectly, and it'll probably take 2 weeks for them to totally destroy it.
Absolutely. I mean, they destroy governments in 2 weeks. Okay, Muslims, climate change.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they got into the cannabis business, and they really messed that up, didn't they? Hey, listen, we only got about 8 minutes. I want to shift gears just for a couple minutes here, Mike. I want to talk about something we talked about just before we came on air. And I don't want to switch gears, but I want to talk about it just for a minute. I study geological stuff a lot, and I wasn't aware that the largest ranges of volcanoes are underneath the Antarctic. And the studies I read said there's 800 volcanoes under the Antarctic, and some of them are starting to show signs becoming active. And then I read the implications of if a large percent of them all of a sudden become active, we could see some major flooding. I wasn't aware of this. I really kind of, and I thought I'd kind of been following volcanoes. I know where all the super volcanoes I thought are located in the world. Then I started studying the ones under the ocean, found out there's a ton down there. But now I find out that the largest volcanic range in the world is underneath the Antarctic, under miles of ice right now. And if they do become active, you're going to see catastrophic changes to the planet. But we've seen it in the past. So something cool. I'm just going to look into it more and study it more. It's kind of shocking.
Barry, you and I have discussed this many times. We're both into this. We've watched it. In Mount St. Helens, when it went, just a little burp, and the next day Iowa was covered in ash, covered, man, feet of it. We have such a situation going on when we look into any of the parks. We have the largest volcano in the world over here on the West Coast. It's been even on Fox News if that thing ignites. And any scientist will tell you, it's not about if it's going to happen, it's when. It could be tomorrow, it could be in 100 years, we don't know. But we were doing a show, actually, when we were talking about Lima off the coast of Italy and Greece right there. And Barry and I were saying that very night on the air, both of us together, that it's about to spark and it could happen by the time you wake up in the morning. And everybody, the media, the people in the chat rooms are saying, no way it's going to happen. By the time the morning hit, it had erupted. Did it do what it did back in the days? Well, back in the days, it covered Europe. It was a real big blow. It was something that cleansed the land, all right. It killed everything in sight.
Yeah, we need actually an hour to talk about geological events that are happening right now, Mike, because it's something I follow a lot and you follow a lot. Not that we can do anything about it, because geological time is massive and these events are all going to happen again. All these fault lines are going to make major movements. All these volcanoes are going to go off. But the fact is that we're seeing a major spike in activity.
It's going to get worse.
Oh yeah,
it's going to get worse because look at where all these nuclear reactors are. Most of them are on fault lines.
Yeah, I did a study on that, Dave, and I could go on to that one about an hour because I did a study of that, and they've built them all close to major fault lines that are going to create massive earthquakes in the future. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Well, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We're committing suicide. I stand by that statement that nuclear power will kill all life on this planet if we do not work right now on eliminating all forms of nuclear contamination on this planet in this generation. Then we are killing ourselves because we're not going to escape it. We only have to be realistic about what we see to say that.
Look at Fukushima.
Oh, yeah. That's another hour. Fukushima wasn't even a complete thing.
It's creating all kinds of issues.
That's just one major.
Chernobyl.
I mean, we could go on. And we could talk about the Scrams. And we could talk about Hanford. We could talk about the Columbia River. We could talk about all these nuclear power plants now that are having major problems. And we're only, 50, 60 years into proliferation of nuclear power. It's suicide. It is absolute suicide. I don't want to start talking about nuclear because I'm going to get pissed.
Yeah.
We already got 4 minutes left. I don't have enough time to get into that one, guys. I really don't.
All it is a chip on the plate.
Crazy.
The volcanoes can create that.
Hey, one good earthquake, man. One major movement could set off another major movement, which could create a cascade of earthquake activity.
Barry,
yeah, no, we got to say.
One big volcano to go.
Okay, guys, listen, the hour's gone, so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you guys. Thanks for coming in. I've got the mad scientist coming in the next hour. This guy,
we'll be listening to Shiz for sure to see what he's got to say. I'm sure that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the hydrogen cell and all kinds of cool stuff. He's going to talk. I'm just going to listen. Okay, we're going
to
take a break.
Much to interrupt him.
We're going to take about a 3-minute break, guys, and I'll be back.
Thanks for joining me, guys.
Okay,
thanks for having us.
Bye bye. Well, welcome back, second hour, folks, and that was a fun conversation. The first hour, we just got into some stuff at the end there that we could have gone for another couple hours on, but we'll save that for another day. Second hour here, I'm joined by Shiziz, the mad scientist, and I think I've known Shiziz now for probably going on 6 years, maybe 5 years. I've known this guy and been on podcasts with him and lots of shows and. A lot of respect for what the man's doing. He's really trying to get the word out to the public about what we can do as far as free energy and alternative energy sources. And today I'd like to talk about the hydrogen cell. Because like I've said many times on my show, I don't have the kind of brain that can retain information like some of my guests can. But I'm joined by Shiziz today, and he has the kind of brain that can bring this stuff out and really explain it well to you. So thanks for joining me, Shiziz. Always a pleasure to have you on my show.
Well, thanks for having me. I was telling you off air there, hydrogen is a subject that really gets me riled up, gets me hot under the collar, because not only is water the most stable molecule on the planet, it's the most amazing. It has healing qualities in it, but with the chemical makeup of water itself, and it is by far the best fuel in the history of time. And why we don't use it? Well, blatantly obvious. If you want to sell oil, you don't want people knowing that hydrogen technology is the way to go. But the thing about it is what I hear out there in the hydrogen deal all the time is that the reason why they say we don't use it, Mythbusters did a hit piece and forever basically made me a anti-Mythbusters I'm no longer a fan. Let's just say that. That's the nicest way to say it. But the way that they portrayed hydrogen technology, even though there are vehicles out there right now using hydrogen cells, and there's many ways to use hydrogen technology. It's not just using it as a fuel. There's a way that you can extract electricity from it. But we can get into that later. But they did a hack job on it. And most folks out there, who are supposedly really highly educated, claim to know about the laws of thermodynamics and physics and all that. Well, basic science says that water is 2 hydrogen, 1 oxygen. And one of these gases is highly implosive, which is hydrogen. One of them's highly explosive, which is oxygen. And so when you can separate the two, you can use physics. And you can use this element as fuel, but you don't see this, and you don't hear about it in the auto industry. You don't hear about it in the mainstream. Every once in a while, you'll get a little blurb about like how they said that the military by I think it was 2018, which I think we're past now, they were going to start running their ships on hydrogen technology. Imagine that, Barry. You're floating in a big old ship on your fuel. You're picking your fuel up as you go.
Actually, I had a friend of mine tell me that 2 years ago that he had seen documents stating that the U.S. Navy, by the year 2025, are going to be running all their ships on the hydrogen cell. Imagine that.
And whenever that. I'm talking about it, it's a different story. They're all, you get these crackpots out there to come out there and say, well, you can't run your car on water because liquid is not compressible. No, well, obviously not. If you understand anything about basic science and physics and mechanics, water is a liquid, so you can't compress a liquid. However, you can use that water as hydraulics. You could use the water instead of if you had the proper materials so that you wouldn't be oxidizing and rusting up your lines. You could use the water for brake fluid. You could use water for hydraulic fluid for everything.
Okay, I'm going to play the part of a complete dummy right now, and I want you to explain to me how I'm going to turn water into a fuel in my car and make my car run on that. You got to explain that to me.
Well, let me start off with something really simple that everybody can understand. I'm going to use a high-tech terminology for one part of it. Water is what they call a dipole molecule, which means it has a north and a south field on it. And so what we figured out that is we can actually take that water molecule and we can send a microwave at that molecule, and it will cause, when those peaks and valleys of that wave is coming by, it'll cause those water molecules to rock back and forth really fast. It'll rock those water molecules so rapidly that they will produce friction, which in turn will produce heat and cook your food. So with microwave technology, hold that in the back of your head. You can cook your food with microwave technology. You can actually boil water into steam with microwave technology. Now, the way that they try to debunk hydrogen technology is saying that, oh, well, using the electrolysis process, it takes more power to get the hydrogen and oxygen to separate, and so you're not getting out as much energy. You can't get the energy fast enough to run it. Never mind the fact that in the 70s, Stan Myers designed a specific injection system that would vaporize that water molecule and then turn around with basically the equivalence of a radio wave and do exactly what you do with the microwave and separate that hydrogen and oxygen on demand. Remember, think about if a microwave is fast enough to rock the water molecule so rapidly that it can cause it to produce friction, which in turn causes it to make heat that cooks your food. Imagine what a higher frequency wave could do at that same molecule. You're rocking these things so far, so fast, that they're producing so much heat and so much pressure that that water molecule will literally separate on demand. And that's what...
Could we produce something really simple for an automobile?
Yeah, it's ridiculously simple. In fact, if you could get past the college-educated and the supposed talented mechanics out there, I know a guy, and this is a true story, he has the capability, he could build a two-stroke engine completely from scratch. He has that much talent and that much knowledge on how the internal combustion engine works. So I contacted him because he has the tools, he has the skill, and he has the capability to actually build an engine. So I contacted him and I told him about a design for a heat engine, what I call a heat engine, which basically would take and build almost the equivalence of a two-stroke engine, but it would do it in a different manner to where you start off running this engine as if it was a steam engine. So basically, imagine this. Water in its natural state is a liquid. It gets to room temperature and it's just liquid. But you start heating that water up. Once you get the water molecules moving around, it starts to change. At 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, water will start to turn into steam. It'll start to boil. It'll turn into steam. Right. So now you're changing something here. Once it becomes steam, it's no longer a liquid anymore. It can be compressed, and so now it's a gas. So with all the technology we have available, such as induction heating, compression ignition, diesel atomizer technology, and sonic vaporization, you take the one by itself, it sounds like it's impossible to run an engine on water, but you could design an engine to literally, using the physics, make this engine run on pure distilled water with no additives, no electrolysis involved. So basically what you do is you start heating up the tank. And as the water starts to circulate around, the only place in that engine that you need heat is inside the cylinder. if you can maintain a 300 degree temperature inside that cylinder, most engines out there run from anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
That's that depending on which engine you got. So you maintain a 300 degree temperature in there using induction heating. With induction heating, basically you take a coil and you wrap it around a piece of metal. When you put a current to this thing, it will actually cause that magnetic field, because the magnetic field is strongest in the center. It'll cause that metal to get really hot.
Right.
Now, stainless steel is the best for this. When you put stainless steel in an induction coil, it will get red hot almost instantaneously. So you don't have to have constant power to this. There's a thing called a ZVS driver that they use to run these induction coils. So the induction coil that I'm talking about, imagine a tube running around in a coil around the cylinder. So you got a stainless steel cylinder, and you got a copper coil that goes around this, and you got a ZVS driver that is putting power to that. The magnetic field heats the cylinder up to 300 degrees. Once it gets up to 300 degrees, the ZVS driver shuts off. You don't need it anymore for a minute. So from that point, as the water is going around through that coil, inside of that tubing, it's also getting up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit. By the time it comes out from around the cylinder, it's already turned into steam. It's primed and ready to go. You take that steam and you run it through a vaporization system that starts to break that water molecule down yet even further. By the time it gets around to the point right before injection, you're talking about basically a fog, a little tiny mist, a fog. The water molecule is down into its tiniest possible size. So when you inject that water into that 300-degree cylinder, it's already primed and ready to go, and it will instantaneously superheat and flash the steam, expanding 1,600 times its volume, pushing that piston down. Once that piston goes down on the upstroke between the compression and the temperature and the already separating hydrogen technology, it takes three things to start a fire. It takes ignition, it takes a fuel source, and it takes oxygen, all of which the water molecule has. Water, being the most stable molecule, does not like to be separated. And so the moment of that separation, it actually releases an electrical charge, and bam, you got ignition. That's why when you see these big explosions like what happened at Fukushima, if you think about the amount of pressure, most of those boilers run anywhere from 650 to 1,250 PSI at ungodly temperatures. All right, and so when you get a system that runs away from you, that pressure and all that combined, that pressure, that temperature, is enough to literally crack the water molecule. It's already down into its smallest form. It's superheated steam, and anything left in that deal will cause that water molecule to crash, and bam, you'll get a hydrogen explosion. There is a reason why they tell you not to throw water on electrical fire. Do you know what that reason is?
Go ahead.
The reason why you do not want to throw water onto an electrical fire is not because of the potential of getting electrocuted. It's because as soon as that water hits that heat, it instantaneously flashes the steam, and you will get a hydrogen explosion.
You're going to fuel the fire.
That's right.
I knew that. I was playing the part of a dummy.
And so taking all that into consideration, and what I just explained to you, how you could actually specifically engineer an internal combustion engine to run on pure distilled water, And you got some brilliant people out there who can't figure this out with basic science and physics and mechanics. I'm telling you right now, either these folks, their indoctrination in their colleges and their public school system is so entrenched in their mind, they're not willing to look outside the box. Nobody said you could run your car on water. You can't pour water into a gas tank and then run your car on it. However, in the racing industry and in the aerodynamic industry, or the aeronautics, and in the farming industry, they have figured out long, long ago that when you get your engine up to operating temperature, you can actually start injecting small quantities of water into that engine, and you can get a boost off of it. They don't do it in airplanes for more than a few seconds because hydrogen is so powerful that if you do it too long, the way that those engines are designed, they will explode. So for obvious reasons, they don't do it like that. However, the mere fact that they know that physics, how that physics works, and it is capable, they've known about this since way back when, back during the war, World War I and World War II. Farmers figured out that during the time when there was shortage on fuel, they had to do is get their tractors up to operating temperature and then inject small quantities of water into their doggone tractors, and they could run their tractors on less fuel than it took before. That just don't even scratch the surface either, Barry.
You lost me. I'm sitting listening to this, and I'm going, wow.
This is why this angers me so much, because you got people out there using children to go out there and scare other children into thinking that we got this carbon problem and global warming, climate change, climate disruption, whatever's going to be next week when the math don't add up. And they said we needed a solution. A guy like me steps up, says, okay, here's your solution. And it's being ignored. And that's just one. Barry, we could go into, they ran a brand new Kubota off of hemp seed oil, for Pete's sake.
Yep.
Pure cold pressed hemp seed oil.
Yep.
You know how much a Kubota tractor cost?
Yeah, well, you can run your vehicle on vegetable oil, man. Yeah. I know people that are doing that right now. They got drums of vegetables and they're producing their own oil, and they're running their vehicles for pennies on the gallon.
Yeah, they said we needed to get away from fossil fuel. All right. Well, fossil fuel is a word that really angers me to no extent, because I'll say this, and I will challenge and dare any scientist to come out here and prove me wrong. All right. There is absolutely and has never, ever been a substance called fossil fuel. Fossil fuel is the biggest lie in the history of time. Grass clippings, leaves, sticks, duckweed, watermill, hemp, all different types of carbon-based plants, including humans, animals, are all what makes fossil fuel, period. Mm-hmm. No ifs, ands, or buts. Absolutely no way. It's irrefutable, undeniable, and I would challenge anyone to a debate. If you have a world that we call this Earth right here, and the chemistry has been doing the same thing ever since the dawn of time, it is constantly making the same substance. Same substance. We can make crude oil in a lab in less than an hour, all right? All you got to understand is how nature does it. It's heat, it's pressure, it's deprivation of oxygen, and you can turn anything into fuel. Anything.
Right.
So yes. Why do we have an oil crisis? Why are we out there battling with each other over resources? Because the powers that be know what I'm telling you is the truth. They know it.
It's the petrodollar, Shaziz. The dollar rules the world. You know, you're right about hemp-based fuels. Henry Ford was going to run all of his vehicles on an ethanol-based hemp fuel, had it developed, perfect fuel for the vehicle, no carbon emissions, no pollution coming out of the pipe. And along came the oil industry, and of course they put a quash on that.
Yeah, he was out there hitting.
Imagine where our society would be right now if oil wasn't being used, if we didn't have the problems that we're having with oil contamination around the world. Where would the world be right now? What kind of a society would we be living in if we'd gone along with Henry Ford and produced all our fuel off of hemp-based ethanol fuel? The benefits are mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. And
he was out there, Barry. He was out there hitting. He was out there hitting the fenders of that car with doggone axe.
Yes, and he couldn't hurt it. If we get going on this one, she says it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
You know what I think about it all.
It's back to the hydrogen technology. The fact that we're not using hydrogen technology on a grand scale, they believe it or not, right now there are people in Japan using hydrogen technology. There are people in the United States, but it's just not being pushed out there to mainstream. They're always saying, well, we got to get these hydrogen plant or hydrogen fuel stations up and all that kind of bull. Yeah. Stan Myers didn't have a fuel station. He had a specific circuit board that was putting out a specific radio wave that was bombarding the water molecule as he injected it into the cylinder. And then once he got it up, then all that he had to have from that point on was the heat and pressure to maintain it. That was it.
Wow.
And you can use the laws of thermodynamics to your advantage. Let's say your engine starts to get too hot. You just push too much fuel to it. It'll cool it down. That's crazy, ain't it? You know what happens if you do that to a regular gasoline engine?
Boom.
Yeah. No, you just push too much fuel to it, and the thermodynamics comes into play. It'll cool it down. And the craziest thing about the whole deal is that there aren't no carbon emissions because you're not even using carbon. Exactly. You're using this water molecule and the physics of what we know we can do with water. You boil it, you turn it to steam, it's now compressible, you keep pushing it even further. You know, water is amazing. It is beyond amazing. You can't destroy it.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I've been trying to get Barry's attention for about 5 minutes here since he doesn't watch nothing.
Well, but, I've got the chat window open. Sorry.
Is anybody reproducing Stan Myers' work right now?
There are people out there trying to do what he did. His brother, as far as I know, still has the information on it. And there are people, I think... what was his name? Doggone on YouTube out there, Russ Grease. I think he was actually trying to make an attempt at it. But even these guys that are actually out there trying to do it, they don't seem to understand. It's as simple as the microwave. It's as simple as the doggone microwave oven. You take that microwave, you bombard the water molecule, and it rocks it back and forth. Now imagine what a higher frequency wave would do. So what they should be testing is the waves. There was one particular individual out there who he wanted to do research in cancer. And he stumbled onto a deal where his equipment was literally igniting seawater on demand. And he showed everybody. And he said that he'd sell out to an oil company in a heartbeat just so he could get the money to do the research on the other deal. So it's not like somebody hasn't showed it done before, but he stumbled onto what Stan Myers was doing long ago. That water molecule being a dipole molecule, all you need to know is that if you can take a microwave and you can rock it that fast, imagine what something faster than a microwave would do. You rip that water molecule apart and it's not going to like that at all. So you have a high frequency, high voltage wave going through that water molecule. I mean, we got sonic vaporization things right now. Some of the systems work on 12 volts. You break it down into a real, tiny fog, like I was saying earlier, and then hit that with a high frequency, high voltage. You'll ignite that fuel right there on demand.
Well, what we need to do here right now, Shaziz, is we need somebody out there with a little bit of money to come to Shaziz's property, and we're going to hire some security guards, and we're going to start producing a couple of these vehicles, and we'll go driving around and see what the public has to say. But they're going to shoot us if we do that. You know that, Asia.
Well, you know, I told everybody and his brother, I said, I'll tell you exactly how to do it. The first thing that they got to do is number one, put everything they got out of the book off to the side. All right. Because what we're talking about here in physics, it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics. What it does is it takes the physics and uses them to your advantage. And I'll share all this information with them for free. I'm not looking for fame and fortune, Barry. I'm just trying to keep my word, what I said to the power company years ago. I told them when they did me the way that they did me and my family, I said, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my entire life to studying every single thing that there is to know about alternative energy. When I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with each and every one of your customers for free. So when your wallet gets thin, you're going to have me to blame for it. And I have done exactly that. I have studied everything that you can possibly imagine to do with alternative energy. There is fuel galore. There is energy galore, and if somebody out there tells you that there's no such thing as free energy, they sure haven't been paying attention to mad science, period.
Well, I'm absolutely convinced it exists. I know it exists, and I guess our mission is to try and educate the public But we're dealing with very, very powerful people that will silence anything that comes out like this.
Sure they will.
Nothing is out of their playbook when it comes to the petrodollar and their control on society. So,
and that's why
what we have to do this is get people doing it in their backyards, in their homes, and civil disobedience is the order of the day as far as I can see.
What I like to call the dream team, if I could get the dream team together for 30 days anywhere on this planet, somewhere in deep seclusion, and we had that thing, we put that thing together, and the instant we got that thing running, ship off a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of every bit of information to everybody and his brother.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
I'm talking about. Because that's the only way you're going to get it out there, because they've got the world convinced. Like when Mythbusters, who has a huge audience, when they say what they did was they put hydrogen down the carburetor, but they had no flashback arrestor. And so with that, it caused a little implosion right there in the carburetor. And that one guy says, well, maybe that's why we don't use hydrogen, because it's too dangerous. And then they like to go back to the Hindenburg and try to say that the Hindenburg, because it had hydrogen in it, it blew up or whatever.
Thank you. Thank you to our sponsors for our show tonight, BP Oil and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Thank you for your contribution to the Mythbusters. We always bring the correct information to the public. Thank you.
Yeah,
exactly.
And they're not the only ones out there doing hit pieces on there, you know. And guys like Nikola Tesla constantly getting, talked smack about whenever. Nikola Tesla, he did a lot for this world. He gave us a lot of technology with his research. And he's not the only one. But when guys like Stan Myers suddenly come up out of a restaurant saying they poisoned him, and John Bedini, John Searle, all these other different major researchers that you've heard about, and suddenly, they're up and gone, and all their information just kind of, goes by the wayside. No, it's just too, there ain't no coincidence. Flat out, they don't want this information out there. That's why we get so much trouble, Barry. They don't want this kind of stuff out there.
Now, well, what you talked about, saturating the public in a very, very short time with information that a simple person could understand and put to work would be the way to get it out, because any information that we're going to put forward is going to be attacked and quashed. And we're dealing with individuals that will kill to stop this information to come forward.
That's
the kind of world we live in. Unfortunately, that's a fact. So what we're talking about, we know this conversation is being monitored right now. We know they're listening to everything we're saying. And they know who we are. And when the time comes, we'll probably be the first guys to come and see. She says, if we don't, then we haven't done something right.
You know what the crazy thing about all this is? The crazy thing about it is all of what we've been talking about in alternative energy, you're going to see it. Probably even in our lifetime, you are actually going to see it. But you're not going to see it until they have control of it. Until they have the patents and everything, so that, like water, who would have ever thought that you would have to buy a bottle of water? All right, mm-hmm. The Earth's 3/4 covered in water. Why should you have to buy water now? Because somebody polluted the water and they got to treat it or whatever. Now you're going to have to pay for their services. But the government has made it so it's illegal to gather up rainwater in some incidents. So incrementally, they're going to try to figure out how they can get a monopoly, probably even try to even patent water, and then have regulations all on it, so that if you do put this engine out there, they're going to want to charge you taxes for running water instead of petrol.
Well, pretty soon they're going to tax our farts there, Shaziz. Yeah. You're going to have a fart monitor, and if you exhale too much gas during the course of a day, you pay according to the exhales.
That's it. the internal combustion engine, it's not going away, all right? And the oil industry, you are never, ever going to see a time in the history of man when we ever run out of what they like to call crude oil. I mean, we can make it. The biodiesel is the equivalent of crude oil. And if you think I'm crazy, go get you some biodiesel and do some temperature test with it. And watch what happens when you get that that doggone oil up to, let's say, 180 to 200 and, 20 degrees Fahrenheit for long periods of time. You'll watch that oil start to do something that you see in the kitchen a lot. When you start to cook it, the oil gets darker and darker and darker. And then when you add that oil into a system that has a set of rings in it that are inefficient at best, that are basically causing you to get carbon blow by past the piston, well, that also gets down in there. Now that carbon amongst the heat, you're getting black oil. So you gotta buy more oil. If that engine was re-engineered and done properly, you could design those ring systems so that you would get absolutely no carbon blow by. You could take the oil filter completely off of that engine, and that oil would never get dirty. Never. But who am I? I'm just a guy who paid attention in science class. All right? And so, you know,
that would sound like a very simple solution to a very serious problem.
Yeah. But we're going to go send our children off to war for other resources. You tell me we're over there in the Middle East because, you know, they got something we need. They ain't got nothing we need. We don't need their oil.
We need their opium. Don't worry. We need that.
You know, we need the illusion of we needing their oil. That's the thing. As long as there's a scarcity.
There's so much oil in North America, it boggles my mind. The untapped resources in the United States of America, the oil sands in Alberta has approximately 3 trillion barrels of oil that they can access. They haven't accessed yet because of the economics, but 3 trillion barrels are existing there. The United States has one of the largest oil reserves in the world, and it's untapped.
Yeah.
So anybody that says that there's not enough world oil in the world to last for the next 10,000 years, you got your head in the sand. Go ahead, Jesus.
That's it. That's it. And the whole entire scam of it is they call it dinosaur fuel, a.k.a. fossil fuel, so that it sounds like, ooh, you know, there were so many dinosaurs, and we're going to run out. And that would be a plus. I wish we'd run out of crude oil. That'd be awesome. But I know we're not.
I remember school growing up, they told us that oil came from dinosaurs, you know? Yeah. Okay. There must be a lot of dinosaurs down there because there's a lot of oil.
Well, here's the thing to think about. In your average pond, every season the leaves will fall off of the trees. All right? And those leaves will start to get down to the bottom of that doggone that bottom of that pond. Well, eventually they'll start to rot and decay, and underneath all that mud and that muck, you'll start building up pockets of methane and carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually, if it's not taken care of and, you know, something, you know, it's not cleaned out, you can have what they call a pond roll over. The pond will actually burp. All right, it'll build an air pocket up underneath there, and it'll burp, and the whole pond will roll over, and that carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide and the methane that's down there from all the rotting plants will literally go up and fill up the water, disperse the oxygen to the extent where all the fish in that pond will die.
Yeah.
Barry.
Yeah.
Can I ask another question, please?
Yes, you can, Steve.
Shaziz, I've heard quite a few insiders from the oil industry that have come out and blown the whistle. And of course, they've been squelched, censored or whatever, but they have said that crude oil is actually a infinite resource and not a finite resource.
Bingo. I've been saying it since I was 9 years old, man. Ever since the first time I heard fossil fuel, and I was the kind of kid that I didn't just take what I heard from the teacher as the gospel. I asked questions, and I was probably the one that made the teacher the maddest. But regardless, throughout my entire life, I paid attention to science because I love science. I like knowing how things work. And whenever you get to the point where here we are today, and you see all these people out there in the world suffering needlessly, people paying high fuel prices. And the thing about it is, California, they shot themselves in the foot. All right, with their environmental thing, right? They went and did this deal about the extra taxes on what they call fossil fuel, and now they're paying $4 a gallon, where the state over is only paying $2 a gallon, and they're all hurt because why are we paying more than them? We're going to have to investigate the oil company. What? No, you put the regulations on them. You charge the extra taxes. That's why your people are paying so much, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous because you was already paying too much.
Yeah, talk about California and the fires. She says, boy, I'll tell you, they're having another incredible year down there.
California's a mess.
Well, yeah, I study earthquakes and earthquake activity and the spikes we're seeing in some areas. And, you know, California gets about 10,000 earthquakes a year, which is about 800 a month. But they had one period there, November 4th to the 11th, they had 842 earthquakes in that seven-day period, which is a one-month average. So
how many of those?
A lot of those are microquakes. You know, of course, you never feel them. A lot of them under one and less magnitude, but they're still earthquakes, still moving.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. How many of those do you think are man-made?
I believe there's an influence for sure.
If you go out and you look at fracking is probably the most idiotic thing that they ever come up with because of hydraulic pressure. You say that people like to try to say, I don't know what I'm talking about, but you think about your house foundation. Your house needs some hydraulic pressure under there. So if you're sitting on a water table or normally moist ground, and then you go through a drought, you'll notice that your foundation will start cracking because the ground underneath it dries out and it settles down. And then when it rains again, the hydraulic pressure will push it up again, and you'll see all this. Well, if you got your house sitting on a big old pocket of gas, and they suck all that gas out of there, that hydraulic pressure is no longer there. There's nothing to hold up that doggone house anymore. Now you're down in a sinkhole. And they wonder why all these sinkholes are popping up everywhere.
Duh. Hey, I stand against fracking. I really do. I mean, it's a barbaric way to produce gas. And the side effects of fracking, I've looked into it. The groundwater contamination is unbelievable. And it's unnecessary, she says. You know it, I know it, and it is decimating our land. I agree with you 100%. It should come to a stop.
Well, I'd like to suggest to all the listeners out there, go actually look up all the uses for CO2. Go check it out, all the uses for CO2. I won't spoil it for you because when you hear all the uses for CO2, it's going to blow your doors off.
Mm.
Yeah. And the EPA says what? It's a bad product now. It's a toxic byproduct or waste product or whatever. Come on, man.
Carbons are criminal, yet we see more green growing on the planet now than we have in the last 20 years.
Well, you said it earlier. We're going to have a smart meter on our face and one on our butt for methane and CO2 so that we can be charged our fair share of taxes.
Well, yeah, we know the world's starting to suffer from oxygen deprivation, so we're going to be charged for that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you exceed your amount of oxygen per hour, you're going to get taxed for it.
But
we got to save the planet, man.
How do you justify it scientifically when the water is covering the earth, three-quarters of the earth is covered in water, it's constantly evaporating, and so oxygen and hydrogen are getting separated, and it's out there, and it's you can't look, there is absolutely no physical way, according to physics, science, mechanics, or anything, to ever destroy water. You can get it dirty. You can get it dirty all you want. And if you paid attention in science class, you can clean it back up and you can put the minerals back in them, but you cannot destroy water. That's why they call it the most stable molecule on the planet. Yeah, I mean, water has the power to cut through stone, for Pete's sake. And the way that they use, I'm not even going to say it, you just look up uses for CO2 and you might find something that's going to be a little shocking in there for you. Oh, man, you're going to find several things that are shocking, and one of them has to do with the medical industry. Yeah, check that out.
Yeah, that's another subject for another day, because we could go on that one for an hour by itself, which is the lunacy involved and how it's all backdoor connected with everybody else. It's all one giant mechanism working against the human race.
Yep, there is absolutely no excuse under the sun to fight over resources. And there is definitely absolutely no excuse to not be using hydrogen technology.
There's absolutely no excuse for not embracing cannabis worldwide.
That's right.
In our society, the changes it would make, combine that with what you're talking about and a few other things that we could do, and we could see monumental changes in our world. Monumental. And they're necessary to this, because you know, and I know that, you know, I don't overstress what's happening to our planet, but I don't understress it also. I study it a lot. And I read a lot of reports. I vet the reports. I find out if they're factual. I go back to the sources and see if the sources are reputable before you speak on things. But if I say to myself, if 50% of what I'm studying right now, the effects on our biosphere, the effects on our insects, on our whole planet, if it's not reversed, then we're going down a very, very dangerous path right now. Very dangerous. There's a thing called the food chain. The food chain is in trouble.
Yeah. Plastic problem alone. We can solve it. Barry, we have all the answers.
We do. But to get people to embrace it, what's it going to take? Is it going to take all of a sudden you can't go to the grocery store and buy food, and we start doing something about this?
Well, because the best thing that I can think about
now, then it's going to get, I think that window will close in the future. Go ahead.
The best thing that I can think about would be to find a way to make homeschooling mandatory, because when you go to a government indoctrination center, aka public school system, your kids are not learning what they should be learning. These kids come out of there, they have no clue of what's going on. And then, to make it even worse, when they get to the criminal enterprise, which is the colleges, it makes people like Antifa, all right? It makes people who get out there and basically do the bidding of the government and the corrupt individuals who are behind the scenes, the elitists of the world. When you're out there protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign, you're doing the government's bidding. You're also making yourself look foolish, because you got a wooden stick and a paper sign that says save the trees. Give me a break, man. Yeah, a little bit of common sense will go a long ways if you try it.
Yeah, the Common Core programs and what's going on in our colleges and schools, well, you know, it's all part of the agenda. And we look at the kids coming out of universities now, and we're producing pretzels. We dropped, number 32 or 33 in scholastic ratings in the world, where one time we were number one and number two.
Hey, but on the plus side?
It's all happened in the last 30, 40 years, where we've seen this complete change in our systems. It's all funneling us into a certain point.
Yeah, but on the plus side, we have all these extra genders now. Come on.
Yeah, and I got to make sure I address you properly, or I could go to jail.
Yeah, I'm Shaziz, man. Oh, look, I'll tell you. Look, I'm not trying to be a wise guy, but come on. After so many years of trying to tell people, they said we had a problem. Okay, so I stepped forward and I used my best of what I had to offer, and I offered them solutions. I emailed congressmen, senators, people in all different types of industries, and offered my assistance to help them out. And, you know, I didn't get not one single response. Nothing. Well,
didn't you write the government of Japan on a solution to Fukushima?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Yeah. Tell me about that again, Shaziz.
Nothing. There's no... They won't listen. They flat out won't listen, because they already know what it is that I've been trying to tell them. You know, when you talk about nuclear power, that's another one that just drives me bonkers.
Yep, I
tell everybody, go out there and listen to Galen Windsor's nuclear scare scam, and you'll find something surprising. All right. Well, you're going to hear all kinds of debunking on it. It doesn't matter. But the fact of the matter is, if you understand science and if you understand physics, there is a solution to every single problem out there. First of all, if you know anything about Japan's islands, and underneath those islands is sand. And when you get enough temperature, sand will melt into glass. So even if those things was to basically get hot and go all the way down, melt themselves through the concrete down into they will only go so far. All right. The only thing that would cause a problem would be the fact that if you had a sealed container with water in it, then it would get hotter and hotter and hotter, and then you would get a hydrogen explosion. It was not a nuclear explosion. It was a hydrogen explosion. And where the danger came in wasn't from stray radiation out there. It was from the particles of the little fuel cells or whatever that got scattered everywhere. Once they're in containment again, they're not dangerous anymore. Period. But you don't hear that. Look, if a fish eats itself, you know what? In the medical industry, they have radiation pills that they give people in place of chemotherapy, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
Here, Why would you put that in somebody's body? Literally.
It's insanity. Here, look, take this radiation pill. Radiation pill? Wait a second. I thought radiation killed it. No, it'll kill the cancer. You'll die later.
But the thing about it is every possible solution under the sun is completely ignored. They use water in the cooling pools for a reason, because the water molecule is so stable and it can absorb that extra energy. The water gets warm. It doesn't get boiling hot. Basically, whenever they put those nuclear fuel rods inside the deal, they have what they call control rods. The control rods basically absorb up the energy as it's being released, as the nuclear rods are depleting themselves, releasing their energy. Normally, if those control rods aren't in the way, then it causes the water to get hot and it causes the water to boil. When you want to slow that down, you put those control rods in the way over a percentage of them or all the way down inside there. That's why I about died laughing when I heard all these people panicking, saying that the control rods fell down into the reactor, and they was thinking, oh, my God, this is terrible. This is terrible. But they don't understand those control rods basically made that reactor weaker. So anyway, 2% of those fuel rods is all that they can use before they become too weak to boil the water at an efficient rate to produce the amount of steam necessary to run their turbines. So what do they do with them when they get done with them? They replace the rods. They put the rods into the cooling pond for another 10 years so that they can cool down. There's a lot of energy right there that you could monopolize on, for Pete's sake. It don't have to boil water. That energy could be used. So you could literally deplete all that uranium if you wanted to, but they don't go into that. It's public safety. We got to hide it. We got to bury it. It's nuts.
So you're telling me that they're only using 2% of the available power in these rods before they step aside?
That's it. That
sounds pretty insane to me.
Yeah, you go through all the trouble to make these little pellets of uranium, highly enriched uranium, and you put them down in these metal shafts of these rods, and then now you got this highly radioactive rod that obviously, if you touch it, since your body is 3/4 water, it's going to interact with your body just like it would if it was in the water.
What happens to these spent fuel rods if they're exposed to air?
If they're exposed to air, they'll just get hot and hot and hot and hot and melt. That's it.
They won't cause an explosion.
No. The only way that they can cause a hydrogen explosion, an explosion of any type, is if they are inside a sealed container and have a runaway, which if you look at a nuclear power plant, it is a sealed container. So you get a runaway, the water keeps boiling and boiling and boiling, and you ain't cooling it down fast enough, so that it pressurizes, and the next thing you know, you have superheated steam that suddenly slams against concrete walls, and it ain't got nowhere to go, and guess what happens? You crack the hydrogen and oxygen molecule, and you get a separation of those two, and the next thing you know, you get a hydrogen explosion. That's it.
Interesting.
And
I know we're going to hear more about Fukushima in the future, because they have multiple problems over there they can't solve. And to get information out about it, Shizu, is kind of hard, because the Japanese government has put a complete quash on information coming out about Fukushima.
Well, and I think that in the nuclear industry, the dirty little secret is that it's not near as dangerous as what they like to say it is. Because for a reason, obviously, you don't want somebody being able to come into a nuclear power plant and steal these rods and then try to use them for nefarious purposes, because you could make a dirty bomb with the stuff, all right? Yeah. The dirty bomb is only going to affect those who are in contact with the particles of, you know, when that explosion. You don't want these particles in your body for obvious reasons. But if you go to Japan, they said back in the day, you know, when we was going to school, and I'm sure you'll remember this, They said that if there was an atomic bomb go off, that it'd be hundreds to thousands of years before you could safely go back in there, right? That's what they said. And everybody's petrified of it. The nuclear industry, the atomic bombs and all that, everybody's petrified of it. But they was telling you to go hide under your desk, put your head over hands over your head and hide under your desk. Really? Why? If a radiation's going to kill me and I'm going to be sick or whatever, but go over to Japan, visit with those people. There were people that lived through that, that were alive when I was there in 1984. All right, and so something don't jive. So you got to explain to me how it was that these folks were actually far enough away from ground zero where they didn't get incinerated, but far enough where they might have got burnt from the bright flash, because there is a bright flash when that occurs. But anything past that, they weren't all dying off of cancer and all these different things. If they were dying from cancer, it wasn't because of that. Period.
Well, everybody's immune systems are different. Everybody's body treats things differently, and you can expose a lot of people to certain elements, and a lot of people will react differently. So, but I know a lot of people did suffer after the atomic bomb.
Sure, they did.
You know, there was diseases and stuff that were directly correlated to the nuclear the amount of nuclear radiation they were exposed to.
Yeah, because when that explosion popped, all that threat in the air, it came down everywhere.
Well, you know, the effects of Fukushima, that's a monumental debate right now, what we see going on there. But the fact is that, you know, these GE Mark 1 generators are probably the worst design ever of a nuclear power plant. And there's about 28 of them or 29 of them operating on the planet right now. And a lot of those are very susceptible to the exact same thing that Fukushima experienced, and that's tidal waves. You know, it drives me nuts that they build these nuclear power plants very, very close to, if not right on top of, fault lines. We're telling the Earth that, you know, you can't have that magnitude 8 earthquake there now because we have built a nuclear power plant here, and if you do, we're going to be in trouble. So listen to us, Earth. I mean, these events have been going with geological time, man. Some of the stuff that's happened to this planet, some of the earthquakes that we've experienced, and those same events happen now, we could be seeing some very serious problems with a lot of nuclear power plants. It's insanity. To me, nuclear power is insanity because we don't need it.
We don't.
At all.
We don't. We could boil water with microwave technology and never even have a problem, because once something went wrong, the system would just shut itself down and the process would stop.
Everything you're doing with these big coal-fired nuclear or energy plants, man, producing electricity, you could do with hemp and have no effect on the environment.
Yeah.
I challenge you to prove me wrong on that, because I've looked at it. We have the answers.
I'm not trying to downplay everyone's fears out there, but we've been hoodswoggled, bamboozled, basically been snookered. But one guy on this planet hasn't been, and that's me, because I paid attention in science class, all right? And I've been doing my research for all of my life. You know, I love to know how things work. But when somebody's out there basically using a bold-faced lie to quite literally steal from people, that's when I draw the line. Mm-hmm. You know, this carbon emissions thing, if they wanted to make these things perfectly carbon-free, we have the technology to do that, all right? As far as the internal combustion engine, the internal combustion engine's only 30% efficient. The majority of the fuel that you run through that goes out the exhaust pipe. Why? Because we can use the same technology that you can use to design a car that run on pure distilled water. You can use that same technology to get a perfect burn on that fuel as you're running it through the intake portion of it. Here's the thing. If you think about how you drive a car, you want to go faster. What do, Barry?
You don't touch the brake.
You smash down on the gas, all right? Well, the way that the systems are engineered right now, it shoves more fuel into that doggone engine. The faster that engine goes, the faster those pistons are going up and down, the less time that you have for a perfect burn. So why are we shoving so much fuel in there? And in order to compensate for it, you have an O2 sensor that literally detects how much oxygen is going on. You also have what they call a catalytic converter, which is a reburner of the waste fuel. So it'll reburn some of that fuel and send some exhaust gases back up and reburn it again a second time. Right. But in the process of that piston going up and down so fast, you have to shove more oxygen into that system to compensate for too much fuel being in there. So in order to do that, they got a lot of different types of systems that they do. But what they should have done to begin with is instead of trying to inject a liquid or a stream of fuel inside there, start breaking that fuel down. By all rights, by the faster you go, the less fuel you should have to use. When you compensate for the fact that that piston is now going up and down faster than it was prior and shortening up the time, that means you got less time for a burn, and that means you need to put a smaller amount of fuel inside there, and you'll still get just as much. The vapors running off of that thing would give you incredible fuel mileage.
Wow. You get my mind going in a million different directions, but unfortunately the hour's already gone, Shiz, and I'm going to have to get you back on again here real soon because some of the stuff we talked about today just gets my brain going, and I got to thank you for joining me today for the hour. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. Can you share with people where they can find you and see some of the videos? And I don't know how many videos you've done in the last 5 years, but can you share that information with us before you leave?
Well, if you go to Shiziz.com, that has links to every single thing that I got. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Shiziz Radio. And if you find anything out there, I don't care if it's a video or if you find a podcast that you like, you can rebroadcast it everywhere. I'm trying to get the information out to people. You know, share the links with people. I don't care. I'm not trying to get famous. I'm not trying to get wealthy. All I'm trying to do is get the information out there, because it just makes me infuriated that these people will sit there day after day and be hypocrites and tell you, you got to save the planet, you got to do this, you got to do that. The doggone protesters get there in a bus. They should go in a rickshaw, right?
Yes.
All right. So, you know, if you want to say that carbon is a problem, you want to say that CO2 is causing global warming, climate change, then let's stop using it. Or let's take the engines that we got and re-engineer them to use technology that's available to make these things run incredibly efficient. If I could get somebody to pay attention to me long enough in a machine shop, we'd build that car, that engine that I was talking about, that would run on pure distilled water. It would use every bit of physics to our advantage. It would use the best of all the technologies that we have available to us right now. And if you built this engine properly, I call it a heat engine for a reason, because the only place that you need that heat is in the cylinder. You don't need it in the block of the engine. We got to have these big radiators, and that doggone engine, like I said, they'll run 160 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on which one you got. If you don't keep that engine cool, it literally produces enough energy to quite literally destroy itself. So if you got the heat only where you need it, which is in the cylinder, you should be able to run this engine 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and come up there and stick your bare hand on that engine block and not get burned.
Cool. Well, listen, guys, if you like what Shiziz is saying, Shiziz does a show on Saturday morning called Mad Scientist. You can find him and join that show and share some of your thoughts and listen to other things that he talks about. Because I know he gets incredible people, and this is what focus of his conversations are about. We also do a show on Shiziz's station called Knights of the Roundtable on Sunday mornings, and you're welcome to join that anytime you'd like. We'd like to see you in there. Thanks for joining me, Shiziz, and it's always a pleasure having you on. It's good to have a man on, I know, whose heart is in this for all the right reasons, that you see what's happening, and we have the answers, and it drives us nuts that public in the world ain't embracing as fast as we want to see them embrace.
Yep.
But we're making those changes, and people are starting to listen, my friend. So I got to applaud you for what you're doing. And folks, please go to Shiziz's sites. Please go to Shiziz's sites and have a look at what he's doing. Last thought, Shiziz, and we'll have to say goodbye.
I apologize for getting so riled up and monopolizing the time, but once you get me started, I'm like that high voltage lightning strike. I'm going.
You're the Duracell bunny buddy, and every time I get you in here, I just want you to keep going the same way you are, because you have a lot more in your brain than I do in mine, and I'm not afraid to admit that. That's why I love having you in here, friend.
I love people. I love this world, and I want to see the right thing done by people. There's people that need fresh water. We should be able to give it to them. There's people that need heat and cooling. We got enough resources right now. If we the people decide we ever want to take our true power back, we'll get it done. That's Amen. It,
folks. It's been a great 2 hours, and I don't even want to stop the show, but time's up. I want to say thanks to Stephen, my producer. And I want to say thanks to you guys for joining in and listen to what we had to talk about today. It was fun 2 hours, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Have a great week, folks. Bye for now. God bless you all.